Hawaii with Truth News Radio Australia on the 28th of August 2013. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Hereward Fenton. I'm going to be with you for the next 2 hours. We're going to be going through international news. Most of the show today is going to be focused on the situation in Syria. Well, actually, not so much in Syria. It's more the situation in the countries that have threatened Syria with attack, Australia being one of them. Australia, unfortunately, being totally central now to the preparations for war. Just as we were back in the Iraq War in 2003, I think Australia has become an important puppet state for the empire. And of course, we do actually have a substantial military capability as well. Small, but substantial in the fact that our forces are very highly trained and we do have the latest technology. And Australia has certainly been heavily involved in Afghanistan. But I think the main importance of Australia's involvement is the symbolic importance. And it gives the impression to the rest of the world of this global coalition. That's what we had back in the Iraq invasion of 2003, the coalition of the willing. And once again, we have Australia being roped in to this kind of barbaric attack on another sovereign nation that never threatened us, really never caused us any harm whatsoever. And once again, it appears to be based on just completely false, trumped-up charges that will never be substantiated. And of course, the bombs will start falling before it's possible to substantiate the claims about the chemical attack. The UN team has now actually withdrawn, that was supposedly going to search the area. They've now withdrawn to safety because they know the US is about to strike. So it's all a game. The game is a game of bluff and threat. And then when basically it's a game of provocation. And when things don't go their way, the way the empire works is they will manufacture a reason for why they have to do this. Of course, well, we've seen for a long time now the rebel forces in Syria have been struggling and they're not winning. The government is winning. The government has tremendous support from the people. The rebels are largely foreign insurgents, largely extremists, Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, and, you know, they're not very good either at what they do. So in order for them to win, it's going to be necessary for the empire, as it were, to completely destroy the infrastructure of Syria, just as they did with Libya. The game will be to wipe out the Syrian Air Force, to wipe out Syria's military capability to a large extent. But of course, this is a very different situation to Libya. It's a different situation to Iraq as well. Syria is a country that's got a lot of support, it's got strong allies. It's a reasonably wealthy country, and it's, you know, it's a secular state, again, as was Iraq. But Syria is a country which, you know, has so much more in common with the West. The leaders there studied in the UK. The wife of the president there is a doctor from the UK. The attack on this country is really going to take things to a new level. And there's going to be a domino effect. You know, there has to be. It has to trigger a larger conflagration. And I certainly don't say that because I want that to happen. That's the last thing I want to see happen, because it's going to result in catastrophe. And who knows what will occur. There's been reports from Iran, and I'll get that article up, that that Israel will be in the sites. Here we see an article from the New York Times. Iranian lawmakers and commanders issued a stark warning to the United States on Tuesday, saying any military strike on Syria would lead to a retaliatory attack on Israel. The warnings came against a backdrop of momentum among Western governments for military intervention in Syria. Iran, which itself came under chemical weapons assault by Iraq during its eight-year war in the 1980s, has been a loyal ally of the Syrian government. And we've got a quote here from a senior official of the Iranian parliament. In case of a U.S. military strike against Syria, the flames of outrage of the region's revolutionaries will point towards the Zionist regime. Iran has always taken the moral high ground on the issue of chemical weapons, actively opposing their use. Well, that's just one side to this story, but I think it's probably going to be the most important side to it. But, you know, we've seen it's been very quiet in relation to Iran for a long time now. The impending attack here on Syria will certainly change all this. Now let's take a look at what's going on in Australia, because our country is being incredibly hawkish. We are basically jumping on the bandwagon of war with an incredible fervour. We've got very strong statements from both Bob Carr, the Foreign Minister, and from the Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd. Kevin Rudd has said that he is now convinced, if I can just find that quote here. Prime Minister Kevin Rudd has said he is now confident that the Syrian regime has used chemical weapons. Bear in mind, you know, the UN team hasn't actually made any official findings yet, so Kevin is just confident. I guess he's getting these back-channel intelligence reports, which, don't have a history of being very accurate or factual. They tend to be more about what the US wants the world to think. And, of course, they never have to substantiate it because it's like intelligence reports. Well, yes, and our intelligence reports are very, very strong. We have strong credibility here. That's what they said about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And a quote here from Mr. Rudd. The Australian government, after consultation with our allies, has formed a view that there is overwhelming evidence that chemical weapons have been used in this attack. Well, of course, we know that. And furthermore, we have high confidence that the regime in Syria is responsible for these attacks. Well, that's where it all falls apart, doesn't it? And, there's no due process there. It's just like, take my word for it. And I've got a little clip here from today of Bob Carr jumping in and pontificating on these matters. And I'll just play that for you now.
A government that uses chemical weapons against its own people has to be made to pay a price. As the evidence accumulates that this chemical weapons attack did take place and came from the Assad forces, of course we're moving to a stage where America and like-minded countries are contemplating what sort of a response. Our preference, everyone's preference, would be for action, a response under United Nations auspices. But if that's not possible, the sheer horror of a government using chemical weapons against its people, using chemical weapons in any circumstances, mandates a response. The most important role for us on the Security Council in the context of Syria is to engage with Russia and China. Russia and China can't be vilified in this. They need to be engaged with, encouraged to look at the evidence, and encouraged to think about their attitudes towards the Assad regime and what the world does when a population is being devastated.
I'd just like to pause there and just reflect on what he just said about encouraging Russia and China to look at the evidence. Notice there's been no mention of any evidence up till now. It's just we believe or we have these views. The only body that is actually mandated to collect evidence is the UN, and they haven't made a report yet. So what exactly are you talking about, Bob Carr, when you tell them to look at the evidence? Or is that your secret evidence that you only show to your mates that, of course, we never get to see? Let's continue.
And now devastated with the application of weapons that terrifyingly enable mass atrocity crimes. Well, there have been enormous difficulties. I've canvassed them in the past. The international legal basis for action, of course, is endorsement by the Security Council. That hasn't been forthcoming because the crisis in Syria has exposed a flaw in international governance that there's no easy way to resolve.
Okay, let's just pause there again and reflect on what he's just said. He said that there is a flaw in the international system of governance and there is no easy way to resolve. Let me translate that into English. Is that you don't have a mandate, right? You don't have a legal precedent to do anything and you're going to do something anyway. You're basically going to violate international law. And you're making it look as if there's some problem with international law. Oh, international law isn't good enough. There's a flaw in it. This is a twisted, sick little argument that really can only come from the mind of someone who actually has some kind of personality disorder. And I'm actually going to get into this subject more in the second hour with my guest Damon Crowe, who's coming on, because I really believe that people like Bob Carr and Kevin Rudd do have a narcissistic type personality disorder, which allows them to sort of play with, to play fast and loose with the truth, because it's all about gratifying their ego and their belief that that they're above the law, that the rules that apply to everyone else don't apply to them. And, if international law doesn't facilitate us bombing Syria, well, there's a problem there with international law. It's not our problem, and we're going to have to fix that. But, I'll tell you what, we're just going to go ahead and do what we need to do anyway. And they're also going to be invoking the doctrine of a responsibility to protect, which I'm going to get into in the next segment as well, which is a UN doctrine, which they are kind of misusing and misappropriating. Let me just continue here with Bob Carr.
And that is that you need a vote of the Security Council, and the Security Council is built on a consensus with any one of the five permanent members being able to veto a decision. Certainly an attack on Syria is an act of war. And America would be weighing very, very carefully. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dempsey, provided a letter to Congress.
We're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back. You're listening to Radio Australia. If you're wondering why the music has changed, our intro stings have been generating a lot of problems with YouTube. Some of my listeners have tried to post YouTube segments of my show, and copyright warnings were coming up. So I've reverted to copyright-free intro bumpers. Some of them are a little silly, but I guarantee you that the subject matter that we're talking about today is not silly. I've been playing to you here a clip from Bob Carr, the Australian Foreign Minister, where he is basically talking about, you know, international law being a bit of an impediment. You know, we need to do what we need to do. And there's a flaw in international law, ladies and gentlemen, which doesn't allow us to go ahead and bomb Syria. But let's just continue here now from that clip of Bob Carr.
Certainly an attack on Syria is an act of war, and America would be weighing very, very carefully. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dempsey, provided a letter to Congress in July that canvassed the risks and the costs of an American military response, whether it's a missile strike or increased assistance to the opposition forces in Syria, whether it's an assault on an attempt to degrade the surface-to-air missile systems of the country. There are risks and there are expenses, and America, the White House and the Pentagon would be weighing those very, very carefully. I want to praise the Obama administration for being careful about its response. I think that...
Isn't that the most incredibly sucky, sucky little sort of kowtowing, performance there from the foreign minister of a sovereign nation, Australia, which is on the other side of the planet from the US and shouldn't be beholden to the US in any way. We have no territorial problems with Syria. We've got no direct conflicts. We don't trade with Syria. There are terrible things happening all over the world, ladies and gentlemen. There are disasters in Africa. There are little wars going on all over the place where people are being killed in horrendous ways. But Australia has to be totally obsessed with this Syrian situation to the extent of Kevin Rudd actually suspending his election campaign for a whole day to carry on about it. Because we are being used. And as I was saying before, I want to get into looking at why it is that these people, how it can be that these leaders play along with this. There's a psychological component to this. There's a personality disorder there that these people have. And you wouldn't obviously see it to look at the people, to look at Bob Carr. He just looks like this sober, decent sort of businessman, you know, probably a man who takes care of his family and mows the lawn and does all those basic things, you know. But yes, he is a sick puppy. He's a man with a very serious problem. And there are so many of them that he blends in, you know, but he's a very sick puppy. Now, and we're going to obviously see more about this sort of overriding of laws and international conventions. I'll just quote to you here from the write-up of this from the ABC. Australia assumes presidency of the UN Security Council this Sunday for the next month, a period during which the situation in Syria is expected to dominate its deliberations. As the evidence accumulates that this chemical weapons attack did take place and came from the Assad forces, we're moving to a stage where America are contemplating a response. And he says everyone's preference would be for action under UN auspices. But if that proves impossible, it would not preclude a response. The sheer horror of a government using chemical weapons mandates a response. Now, pay close attention to the language here. That he's avoiding the elephant in the room, which is like, am I breaking the law? Is this actually a violation of international norms? Is this a violation of international law? Well, yes, it is. Is there a UN mandate? No, there is not. So actually, what he's doing is he's endorsing, promoting a completely criminal action. It's like, it would be exactly as if, you know, I was worried about my next door neighbor. Didn't have any evidence to prove it. I think my next door neighbor might have done something terrible to his wife. So I say, I'm just going to go in, I'm going to kill him. I'm just going to go and kill my neighbor. And of course, well, actually, you don't have the right to do that. It's against the law. You don't even have the evidence. You don't even have the evidence, right? It's a criminal act, and that's actually what's going on. We have just blatant criminality. We have a psychopathic, maniacal criminality at the highest level in our government. Isn't it incredible, ladies and gentlemen, the position we've reached? We've reached the stage where there are gangsters who run things. But they look so good, you know, they just look like normal people. They wear a tie, they you know, Bob Carr, I mean, you know, to look at him, you just say, well, that's just like a bank manager or something, you know. How can he be evil? Well, what it is that the evil is deep inside them, and they just have to play along with certain memes. They have to go along. They play the role. They don't think too far, and then they live in their little narcissistic bubble where they manufacture their own reality, and they can still pretend to be this nice, harmless, genial bank manager type person. Fascinating, really. Now, let's move on to talk about this controversial doctrine called the responsibility to protect. This is now being directly referred to by leaders in Europe as the justification that will allow a military intervention without a UN mandate. Although, ironically, the doctrine of responsibility to protect does, in its formulation, is actually a UN mandate, and it refers to the necessity for the UN to intervene to protect people in situations of genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and ethnic cleansing. And these are placed under the umbrella term of mass atrocity crimes. It's a United Nations initiative that was established in 2005, and it consists of an emerging intended norm or set of principles based on the claim that sovereignty is not a right but a responsibility. So some very interesting and disturbing concepts to consider there. Sovereignty is not a right but a responsibility. The precedent is therefore being set that we cannot simply defer to another country's sovereignty, as we currently do or should do under international law. There is another principle which overrides that and says, well, in this case, your sovereignty doesn't apply. We're just going to go in and we're going to fix this situation because there's something terrible happening in this country. So we have a responsibility to protect. As I said there earlier, the focus is on these mass atrocity crimes. The responsibility to protect has three pillars. One, a state has a responsibility to protect its population from genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. Two, the international community has a responsibility to assist the state to fulfill its primary responsibility. And three, if the state manifestly fails to protect its citizens from the four above mass atrocities and peaceful measures have failed, the international community has the responsibility to intervene through coercive measures. Military intervention is considered the last resort. Wow. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after this break. Don't go away. Thank you. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I've just been going through the concept of responsibility to protect, a United Nations initiative, which is now being used quite boldly to facilitate or justify attacks on other countries. It was used last year in the attack on Libya, and it's raising its ugly head again. It's often shortened to the phrase R2P, a cute little name there for actually a rather nasty concept. And why is it nasty? Well, I think it all comes, it all stems from this idea that basically sovereignty is not a right but a responsibility. Once you default to that position, it then this becomes a carte blanche. It becomes a pretext for tyrants, for big brother states, for Orwellian superstates to intervene and basically do what they wish. And all you have to do is have some manufactured crisis. And you, ideally, you just have someone throwing some chemicals around, and that then immediately triggers the crimes against humanity alarm, and you can say, well, there it is, there's the chemicals, we've got to go in, boys. So, you know, in its fundamental principles, it's actually very dangerous. But, you know, what we're actually seeing now is that those who are using the construct are not even adhering to the fundamental principles. And I've got an article here from, well, it's actually from France, France 24 International News. Syria carnage reopens the debate over responsibility to protect. France's President François Hollande on Tuesday became the first leader to raise the UN-backed responsibility to protect to justify possible military action against Syria. And it says here, world powers are deeply divided over whether outside military intervention is justified. And critics refer to the so-called R2P as a smokescreen for Western meddling. Yes, meddling. Meddling is a very understated term for what it is they're doing. I mean, let's just call it rape, murder, massacre, destruction. How about let's call it genocide? Anyway. Getting back to the article here, the so-called R2P doctrine was passed by the UN General Assembly in 2005 as the world sought a way to prevent a repeat of the horrors of the 1994 Rwanda genocide and the Srebrenica massacre in Bosnia. UN leaders from Kofi Annan onwards and Western governments have hailed R2P as a humanitarian breakthrough. But its invocation in the 2011 intervention in Libya has been controversial, indeed. A 2005 UN summit laid down the responsibility for each state to protect its populations from genocide, war crimes, ethnic cleansing, and crimes against humanity. If a state fails to do so, the 2005 declaration committed signatories to take collective action in a timely and decisive manner through the Security Council in accordance with the Charter, including Chapter 7, on a case-by-case basis and in cooperation with relevant regional organizations as appropriate, should peaceful means be inadequate and national authorities manifestly fail to protect their populations. So let's just run through some of those checks and balances there, shall we? To take collective action through the Security Council in accordance with the Charter on a case-by-case basis and in cooperation with regional organisations. You know, that's a little different to what Bob Carr's kind of saying, and, of course, what Barack Obama and David Cameron and François Hollande are saying. because they're basically saying, oh, yeah, forget about all the details. Let's just, you know, we have responsibility to protect here. Bad stuff is going on. We're going to go in. We're going to fix it, right? In other words, just no more trappings, no more attempt to make it even look like you are actually going through the correct procedures and getting endorsements and consensus. Now, Russia and China, veto-wielding permanent members of the Security Council, abstained in the votes on the landmark resolutions, which allowed a no-fly zone and appropriate military strikes to protect Libyan civilians. Russia later complained that NATO went beyond the mandate and used the resolutions to bring down Gaddafi, who was eventually killed in October 2011. Russia and China have since blocked any Security Council attempt to increase pressure on Syria's Bashar al-Assad, whose forces are now accused by Western nations of launching a chemical weapons strike in the Damascus suburbs. Okay, I want to turn now to a report from The Guardian, which says that with Russia and China likely to block a UN resolution, the UK and the US have both signalled that they are prepared to act without a UN mandate. International law experts say intervention could be legally justified without a Security Council resolution under the UN's responsibility to protect. So we see, well, the editorial staff here at The Guardian are certainly joining those two things together and simply saying, yes, this is now going to be okay because of the UN's responsibility to protect doctrine, as it were. Now, let's have a look at a letter that was also published on The Guardian on this very subject, Syria and the problem of responsibility to protect. And this is actually a letter from a reader. According to your report, the US and the UK have signalled they are prepared to act against Syria without a UN mandate. As I've just said, I won't bother repeating that. According to another report, Douglas Alexander, Labour's shadow foreign secretary, did not rule out Labour giving its backing to a military intervention without a UN resolution. But the 2005 World Summit outcome document, in which the heads of state unanimously approved the new international norm of the responsibility to protect, a subsequently approved by UN Council resolution, states that the international community has the responsibility to use appropriate diplomatic, humanitarian, and other peaceful means in accordance with Chapters 6 and 8 of the Charter to help protect populations from genocide, war crimes, ethnic cleansing, and crimes against humanity. In this context, we are prepared to take collective action in a timely and decisive manner through the Security Council in accordance with the Charter. And just continuing here from the letter, former US Secretary of State Madeleine Albright and former US Presidential Special Envoy to Sudan Richard Williamson, who co-chaired a working group on the responsibility to protect, stressed in the group's report that R2P's implementation is to be done in accordance with the UN Charter, which means that the central decision-making authority is the UN Security Council. So, you know, even under this, you know, slightly Orwellian concept, you can't just get countries saying we're just going to invoke it. That's not ever the way it was framed. That's not the way it's actually meant to work. And the writer here goes on to say, I wonder who are these international law experts who advise absolutely wrongly that military action against a sovereign state, other than in self-defense, without the authority of the Security Council, can be justified under R2P. According to another report, Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, warned that any attack on Syria without Security Council sanction would be a crude violation of international law. He compared the situation to the run-up to the Iraq invasion of 2003. So, it's just beggars the imagination, doesn't it? I mean, and we've really got to get into studying the pathologies of the mind to understand the degree of twisted and sick deceptions that are going on the international stage. And I will be getting into that in the second hour. Meanwhile, stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be with you today. You with Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm going to play to you now some of the recent address by John Kerry, a Secretary of State of the United States, on Syria, and I'll perhaps pause at certain points to give you my thoughts on what he said. This is actually from a press conference from a couple of days ago.
The last several days, President Obama and his entire national security team have been reviewing the situation in Syria. And today I want to provide an update on our efforts as we consider our response to the use of chemical weapons. What we saw in Syria last week should shock the conscience of the world. It defies any code of morality. Let me be clear. The indiscriminate slaughter of civilians, the killing of women and children and innocent bystanders by chemical weapons is a moral obscenity. By any standard, it is inexcusable, and despite the excuses and equivocations that some have manufactured, it is undeniable. The meaning of this attack goes beyond the conflict in Syria itself. And that conflict has already brought so much terrible suffering. This is about the large-scale, indiscriminate use of weapons that the civilized world long ago decided must never be used at all, a conviction shared even by countries that agree on little else. There is a clear reason that the world has banned entirely the use of chemical weapons. There is a reason the international community has set a clear standard and why many countries have taken major steps to eradicate these weapons. There is a reason why President Obama has made it such a priority to stop the proliferation of these weapons and lock them down where they do exist. There is a reason why President Obama has made clear to the Assad regime that this international norm cannot be violated without consequences. And there is a reason why, no matter what you believe about Syria, all peoples and all nations who believe in the cause of our common humanity must stand up to assure that there is accountability for the use of chemical weapons so that it never happens again.
Okay, let's just pause to reflect on everything that he's just said there. I think, you know, it's very easy in a way. His role here is quite easy in the sense that everything that he said there is pretty much true. I mean, you know, these weapons are horrendous. This is more than just the situation in Syria, and there is a principle at stake here. Of course, these things are true. But, of course, the emphasis on chemical weapons as being of some sort of order of magnitude worse than all the other weapons that the US have used in the past is, you know, there's a crack there in the logic, not to mention the morality of what he's saying, because the Americans used napalm in the Vietnam War. You know, and if napalm is not a chemical weapon, I don't know what is. Cluster bombs. I mean, Israel used cluster bombs on civilian areas in Gaza. The weaponry that is commonly used it has such a range of power and force. I mean, we saw with the leaked video from Baghdad that WikiLeaks provided, men being cut in half by cannon fire from helicopters, civilians. Now, I don't quite see why being cut in half with cannon fire, with like machine cannon fire from a helicopter, is less bad than being killed with a chemical agent. You know, it's just one form of horror versus another form of horror. It's ridiculous. It's utterly ludicrous. So that whole argument, actually, you know, of course, the fact that it's horrible, don't disagree. The fact that we should do something about it, don't disagree. But the fact that this is some sort of unique form of horror that means we do a whole bunch of new things that we never did before, well, that's just stupid. It's moronic. And you have to be one of these people in the narcissistic bubble to actually believe that. And that's what I'm going to get into a little bit in the second hour, is that John Kerry is another example. He's in his little illusory world that he's created for himself, his artificial reality, where, you know, a red line has been crossed and everything's changed, and that means we're going to have to go in and bomb Syria. And, you know, in doing that, they're going to kill at least hundreds of people, probably thousands, and those people are going to die in horrific, horrible ways. But that won't be a crime against humanity. No, that will be R2P. That'll be like, we intervened to protect the people of Syria. Okay, I know I'm possibly preaching to the choir here today, but I think it's just important to underline and highlight the absurdity and the stupidity and the illogicality of a lot of statements that come from these political leaders. So let's continue now with this speech by John Kerry.
Last night, after speaking with foreign ministers from around the world about the gravity of this situation, I went back and I watched the videos that anybody can watch in the social media, and I watched them one more gut-wrenching time. It is really hard to express in words the human suffering that they lay out before us. As a father, I can't get the image out of my head of a man who held up his dead child, wailing while chaos swirled around him. The images of entire families dead in their beds without a drop of blood or even a visible wound. Bodies contorting in spasms. Human suffering that we can never ignore or forget. Anyone who could claim that an attack of this staggering scale could be contrived or fabricated needs to check their conscience and their own moral compass. What is before us today is real.
Okay, wow, that's just the strangest thing I've ever heard. He just said that anyone who believes that a story like this could be fabricated has to check their moral compass. Well, firstly, actually, no one's saying that it was fabricated. Like, no one's saying that, hey, the chemical attack never happened. The question is, who launched it, Mr. Kerry? So you have actually just shifted the focus on to a kind of a decoy topic. You've used a straw man argument, essentially, haven't you? You've basically, you've projected the idea that, in fact, there is some conspiracy theory that these attacks were not real, that they were fabricated, when, in fact, no one's saying that. In fact, the UN investigation teams in the past have said that there is strong evidence that the rebels in Syria were actually responsible for chemical attacks. So you are just the most incredibly dishonest, disgusting liar that I think I've ever seen. I mean, you're on a grander scale than what we have in Australia, I have to say, but you're certainly cut from the same cloth. Anyway, let's continue now with this amazing piece of information from the U.S. Secretary of State.
And it is compelling. So I also want to underscore that while investigators are gathering additional evidence on the ground, our understanding of what has already happened in Syria is grounded in facts, informed by conscience, and guided by common sense.
Okay, notice that there are no facts. He's not given you a single fact. He said it's grounded in facts, there is no UN report, and he hasn't even given you any facts. This man is like some sort of devil, like literally a devil from hell. That's the only way I can describe it. It's scary, and it makes me feel very uncomfortable and gives me shivers up my spine.
The reported number of victims, the reported symptoms of those who were killed or injured, the first-hand accounts from humanitarian organizations on the ground, like Doctors Without Borders and the Syria Human Rights Commission. These all strongly indicate that everything these images are already screaming at us is real, that chemical weapons were used in Syria.
Notice again, just continual appeals to emotion, continual appeals to emotion. It's true. It really happened. Yes, we know. We know it happened, John Kerry. That's not the question that you are supposed to be looking at. That's not the focus. Right, but you're using this appeal to the horror, the emotional trauma, the pain. Oh, I looked at the videos myself. Oh, it was so horrible. Yes, we know. So what? It's just incredible. How can they get away with this? Continuing.
Moreover, we know that the Syrian regime maintains custody of these chemical weapons. We know that the Syrian regime has the capacity to do this with rockets. We know that the regime has been determined to clear the opposition from those very places where the attacks took place. And with our own eyes, we have all of us become witnesses. We have additional information about this attack, and that information is being compiled and reviewed together with our partners, and we will provide that information in the days ahead.
Well, let's hope so, Mr. Kerry. Let's hope that you do provide that information. I'm sure you won't. In fact, I'm willing to lay a wager that you will never provide that information, just like the Bush team never provided their information about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. But, you know, these deceptions, these very obvious, very, very superficial, gross deceptions, you got away with them. The regime got away with them. There are worse lies that they've told. There are more horrendous crimes against humanity that they've been involved even than this. But because they get away with these completely obvious ones, there is no justice. Do stay with us for the second hour. I'll be with Damon Crowe, and we'll be getting into the psychological aspects of how these kind of despicable people can even exist in our world.